everyone, and welcome to that classic rock show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, the mighty 101.5 FM. I am one of your co-hosts, Jim Samaria.
Greetings, Jim, and greetings, listeners. I am your co-host, Mark Plotnick. Each week, Jim and I bring you songs, insights, and interviews covering rock music and more from the 1950s through the 1980s, or wherever the music takes us.
Mark and I are authors of the book, Classic Rock, Photographs from Yesterday and Today, and you could find it at Black Circle Records in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. And our book features my photography of classic rock artists from 1973 to present day with words by the piano man, not Billy Joe, but my piano man, Mark Plotnick.
In my own mind.
In your own mind, yeah.
Well, Jim, you know, nothing inspires me more than to talk music with a bona fide rock and roll pro. It would be so great if we had someone like that on today's show.
We do. We do.
You're kidding me.
I'm not kidding you.
Oh, wow. Exciting. I can't wait.
Well, who we have on the show is Mr. Derek Holt of the Climax Blues Band, one of my favorite bands of the 70s and 80s. I was fortunate to become friends with guitarist Pete Haycock in the early 2000s. So now it's really cool that I'm friends with Derek. So welcome to the show, Derek.
Well, hello. Thank you very much for that wonderful introduction.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Yeah. Hi. Nice to be with you.
Great.
Thank you. Well, Derek, let's start off with an easy question. You know, whenever I read interviews with classic rock era musicians from the UK, so many people talk about skiffle as a starting point. And the question I have is was this the case with you? And explain to us exactly what skiffle music is, or what.
Right. Well, I'll try and cut a long story short. But my brother, who was 8 years older than me, he was a guitarist in a skiffle band, and he was playing songs from a guy I'd never heard of called Lonnie Donegan.
Oh, sure.
Who in England? I think he was born in Scotland. But he discovered this sort of like Southern American type music. Basically, the band consisted of a banjo, a guy playing a washboard with thimbles on his fingers, a bass guitar, which was made out of a tea chest, and a pole with a piece of string, right? And basically they were knocking out this, what was called skiffle. And I was absolutely transfixed by this. And I was probably only 8 years old. And that's what really started me off. That was my first introduction to anything live, really.
Well, you went from skiffle, obviously, into a band that played blues. So what made you get into rock and roll and blues? Who were some of your influences, and why did you switch over?
Well, the thing is, it was a natural progression from skiffle, which was basically 12-bar music. And, you know, all the guys, when we first met, we were all sort of into this. We were into people like Little Richard and Chuck Berry, and well, you mentioned Muddy Waters, you know, T-Bone Walker, Albert King, all those people, because we were able to hear it on Radio Luxembourg or any of the English stations. If you searched hard enough, you'd find this type of music, and it was like, you know, hey guys, did you hear last night? Did you hear, you know, so and so, and. And we just all enjoyed it. And because it's, I wouldn't say simple music, but it's basic music. And every song's got a message, a great story.
So living in England, and there's these wonderful African-American artists, what resonated with guys from England that these musicians just made you feel differently?
I think it's just the heart of it and the soul of it. You know, just to play a simple 12-bar blues with a harmonica or a saxophone, and when you're in that groove, it's one of the best feelings. You know, it's the perfect vehicle.
Well, I always find it funny, and Mark, you'll agree, you know, they call it the blues, but it always makes me feel good. So I don't know why.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah. But I think when you're playing it, you know, I sit down and I play the blues and I'm trying to communicate something that I'm feeling inside. It can be sadness. But I think to the listener, they pick up on something a little different, you know, than the person who's actually playing it.
Well, I don't know. It always puts me in a good mood. I put on B.B. King, and even especially The Thrill Is Gone, it's like, yeah, the thrill is back, baby.
But also the great thing for me is that maybe every solo he plays or whoever plays will never be the same one. It's the feeling that you put into it at any particular time, and that's what I love about it.
You know, that's the key word, I believe, the feeling you get from it.
Feeling and soul.
So let's continue with your career in early 1968, the Climax Chicago Blues Band was formed, and by late 1968, the band was recording their first album at Abbey Road, of all places. Yeah. How was that experience?
Well, how did we get there is a story. When I first left school, I worked in a laboratory in a grinding wheel factory where I met Colin Cooper, who became the lead singer. And we had this love for the blues. And so we formed the Climax Chicago Blues Band, just going basically up and down the clubs of England and, in a cold van. And one night, this guy came to see us at a gig in Stoke-on-Trent and said, would you like to come down to London? We're looking for a blues band, and it happened to be somebody from EMI. We said, yeah, sure, you know. We were so excited. We were semi-pro then. And he said, well, can you make it to Abbey Road on so-and-so date, you know, 1968? And we couldn't believe we were going to Abbey Road to do this, what was basically an audition, if you like. And we ended up doing an album in 2 days. They kept us there. They said, no, yeah, we'll carry on. We'll make this record. You're that good. And that's how it started. Incredible.
Well, do you have anything to add about any visitors to your recording session?
I do, yes, of course. We found out that the Beatles were in studio. I think we were in Studio One. The Beatles were in Studio Two, and Pink Floyd were in Studio Three. Now I'm like 18 years old, right? And we're playing in the main room there, and Paul McCartney walks into the control room, like I'm looking at you now. He just walks in and looks at us, you know, as we're playing under a Mean Old World or whatever it was, some sort of blues. And he went like this. He went,
yeah. So you got a thumbs up from Paul McCartney.
A thumbs up and a thumbs down. but it was, for me, jaw-dropping. You know, I mean, I was always a big Beatles fan anyway. And to see one looking at me play was something else.
Did he give you any pointers on playing bass?
No, I think I taught him a few things, though.
Good answer.
That's good. Well, you know, you mentioned a few seconds ago, you mentioned Mean Old World. So why not play Mean Old World from the Climax Chicago Blues Band from 1969, your self-titled album?
Fantastic.
Your debut album, too.
I've got these blues, I'm gonna pack my things and go. I've got these blues. I'm gonna pack my things and go. You don't love me. You're loving Mr. So-and-so.
I love that song, and I do have that album at home. I'll have to send it to you in Spain and have you autograph it, okay?
Yeah, sure.
Well, anyway, I believe Duane Allman and Eric Clapton also recorded an acoustic version of that song while together in the Derek and the Dominoes. So it is a good song, well played. In any case, you guys toured the USA through the 1970s and shared the stage with some of the biggest names of the era, like Jeff Beck and ZZ Top. And you also opened for blues icons B.B. King and Albert King. So what was it like opening for acts like that?
Well, if you think about the Albert King gig, we just arrived in America on our very first tour. And the first few dates were in very small clubs. We played one in Long Island called My Father's Place. And then after about the fourth gig, we found ourselves opening for Albert King and T-Bone Walker.
Oh my,
at Carnegie Hall.
Oh my gosh.
Now, where does that come from?
they're your idols, and now they're your, they're on the same stage with you. You know, that's amazing.
What a thrill. I mean, Albert King, I just loved Albert King. He was a guy with immense, stage presence, yeah. But technique, left-handed technique,
He had large hands, very large hands for on the fretboard. I just wanted to ask, I'm sorry to interrupt, but did you feel intimidated with these gentlemen on stage, these giants of the blues? Did they look down on the English guys who had come over trying to play their music? What was the...
I'm not sure. We didn't get any vibe at all, or bad vibe about these guys from England coming over there and being on that stage. We never got any of that. If anything, we got we were very well received. And we never even thought about what we were doing in terms of taking the blues back to America. I mean, it never even came in our consciousness, you know. And I would say that, and everybody pretty much along the way that we met B.B. King, and they were always very respectful to us, you know.
Well, I just, you know, what I think the British guys did is they brought the blues to a lot of a white audience in America. Because believe it or not, a lot of these artists weren't really revered in America like they were in England. And you guys, along with some of the other bands, of course, Yardbirds and Zeppelin, Stones, et cetera, really brought it back to the wide audience. And you guys just played it so beautifully, all your bands, you know.
But, well, I think you're right there. I mean, I remember, you know, B.B. King couldn't get in front of white audiences until, you know, I think he supported the Stones or something like that, you know. And the same with Chuck Berry, you know.
Yeah.
If it helped, how wonderful.
Well, it did help. And, you know, going back to the Climax Blues Band, one of my favorite albums, particularly live albums, is your album FM Live. It came out in 73. And speaking of the blues, one song that really shines on that album is So Many Roads. And your guitarist, Pete Haycock, really takes off. But I got to tell you, the rhythm section of you and I think it was John Cuffley, right?
Yeah, drummer. That's right, yeah.
Really keep Pete going on this. So let's play from FM Live, So Many Roads.
This next song is a nice slow blues for all you slow blues fans. A song called So Many Roads. Satisfied.
All right, so Derek, in 1976, the band had a top 10 hit with Couldn't Get It Right. So my question is, why the change in musical direction?
Well, the whole thing about Couldn't Get It Right is quite a story, because we did an album called Gold Plated in a studio in the middle of England called Chipping Norton. And it was produced by a guy called Mike Vernon, who in his early career produced the early Fleetwood Mac.
Correct.
So we went to the studio and produced this album, Gold Plated. Delivered it to the record company, which was Miles Copeland's company, BTM. And they put it in front of RCA, who were the distributors. And they said that we can't hear anything commercial on it, really, to promote. So would you mind going back in the studio and seeing if you can come up with something a bit more commercial? And what did we do? We wrote Couldn't Get It Right, and that became our first sort of commercial success. But in terms of, say, a change of direction, I still think it's got a lot of blues in it.
Well, it's a great song, so why don't we play it? What do you think? All right, here's Climax Blues Band with their top 10 hit, Couldn't Get It Right.
Time was drifting, this rock got to roll. So I hit the road and made my getaway. Restless feeling.
Please stay tuned for part two of that classic rock show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP 101.5 FM, where we will continue our discussion with Derek Holt,